it's time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local arts, craft, gifts and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oniroa. Last Saturday I talked to jazz musician Briar Ross, filmmaker Sharon Brown, Kit and Sawney from the Waiheke Youth Theatre, Rebecca Armstrong from the Waiheke Coast Guard, and Toby King Turner from Cycle Action Waiheke with Nikki Kay, the MP for Auckland Central. Well, starting off at the beginning of February and going right through to Easter, every Sunday afternoon there's a fantastic series of concerts coming up, which is organised by my guest, Briar Ross. Good morning, Briar.
Good morning.
So, tell us a little bit about what you've got organised.
As you say, there's 10 concerts that go right through February and March, and also Easter Sunday and Easter Monday. So, I've got a fantastic lineup of 10 different bands, with quite a variety of music, some that people will have heard before when they came to my Jazzy Sunday series down in Karora Road last year. Bridge City Jazzmen, a great blues band called Gumbo. San Diego, fantastic Latin group. And culminating with the Nairobi Trio at the end. But the first one is going to be really great. It's Julie Mason and the Jazz Divas, Go Latino. So that's the opening concert on the 7th of February at the Waiheke Golf Club.
So you've pretty much got a theme, I suppose, flowing through their musical theme of being, you know, some new music, but fairly accessible stuff that people are going to be able to relax to or get up and have a bit of a dance as well, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. My stuff is pretty laid back, but we get people up dancing as well. And my band will be playing each day as well, alternating with the main band. So okay. They get a bit of a mixture of two different styles of music.
Yep. And this is, it's an afternoon event, isn't it?
Yes, it goes from 1 till 6 p.m.
Okay, and whereabouts?
It's at the Waiheke Golf Club, and they've got a fantastic deck area out the back of their, well, on the roadside of their clubhouse, which looks out over half a dozen olive trees and out onto the fairway. So it's a really nice, relaxing kind of place to be, but because it's part of the clubhouse and because it's covered, it's a great all-weather venue, which is a really big plus for me because if it's weather's a little bit inclement, then people don't come, but this time they don't need to worry about it. We can all be inside the clubhouse and on the deck, so that's a big plus.
Okay, so they can chill out there on the Sunday afternoon, listen to some music, and the bar's open?
Yes, the golf club will be running a full bar for people, and we'll also be doing, I make olive oil as well, so we'll be doing platters of my olive oil and olives and dips, etc. And we'll also be doing a barbecue where people can come along and they can either bring their own barbecue or they can purchase a barbecue and some sort of luxury salads from us and have something to eat as well. So they can stay for a short time or stay the whole afternoon if they want to.
It sounds pretty relaxing. So is it the type of event that would be suitable to take your kids along to?
Yes, it would, yeah. We welcome children. Children under 12, I think it is, are free, and just as long as they're supervised by their parents. And I really love to see children along at my events because not a lot of live music around these days for kids to come along. And it's fascinating watching them listen to the music and their reactions. They're funny sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have music in the afternoon. I find, you know, that sometimes at night, you know, it's just such a big drama, but it's quite nice just in the afternoon to kick back and listen to some music.
So that's right.
Yeah. So the first one is that first Sunday in February, which is the
7th.
The 7th, isn't it? So yeah. Who have you got lined up for that weekend?
Well, that's Julie Mason and the Jazz Divas. Now, that is most of them are just seating where people can sit on the grass or on the deck, but that one is sort of a concert performance. So if people want tickets for that, when they buy them from Shop the Rock or the iSight or online, we will be doing sort of theatre-style seating for that because the Divas are doing a fantastic show. And so there's four of them, divas from all over New Zealand, led by Julie Mason, Phil Broadhurst on piano, Oliver Newland, I think, on bass, and Elaine I'm not sure if Elaine's doing drums or not. So that will be, that's the first concert, which will be really great. And then the second one is also a big stretch for me, and I have to thank my Waiheke Jazz Club members for this, because some of them have joined my club, so I've taken that money to put towards bringing up a fantastic band from Wellington called Hot Club Sandwich. Wonderful musicians, and they do standards, but they also write really amazing original songs that I love and people will really love too.
Okay, that sounds all pretty exciting, really. So now people, you've got different prices, haven't you, for on the gate or pre-buying?
Yeah, we want to encourage people to pre-purchase their tickets. So they're $15 pre-purchased, and I've kept the price really pretty tight there, so because we want support from our lovely Waiheke people. So they're $15 pre-purchased and $20 at the gate. And the Nairobi one is $20 pre-purchased and $25 at the gate.
Yeah, well, they're a pretty popular band, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And Hot Club Sandwich are sort of similar to them in that they're a really well-known festival band. They travel all around New Zealand, and they're quite a performance orientated. People will really be drawn into them and enjoy their music.
Great stuff. So, okay, so that Shop the Rock, the Eyesight, and the Visitor Information Centre.
And the Golf Club.
And the Golf Club. And the website?
The website is www.waihekejazzandblues.co.nz.
Fantastic. Oh, we're looking forward to that.
Me too.
Yeah, good stuff. So, do you get nervous in the lead up to it? You're busy?
Ooh. No, I don't have time. It's just an awful lot of work getting all that advertising out there and letting people know. And it's one of the great things about Waiheke. It's relatively easy to let the local people know what's happening. It's a little more difficult to get people over from town, but we are doing promotion there, so I hope people will come for some of the events and enjoy the other things they can do on Waiheke as well.
Great. Thanks very much for joining us, Briar.
Thank you. That's
Briar Ross, organiser of Jazzy Sundays. That's from February through to Easter at the Waiheke Golf Club, 1 to 6pm. You're on Waiheke Radio. You're on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life. I'm Chris, and I'm with you through until 12 o'clock, and we're going to be, we're just kind of taking a look at what's going on around our island. On Monday night, there's a film debut from local filmmaker Sharon Brown. Her short film will be screening at Waiheke Community Cinema, and she's here to talk with us about that movie this morning. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning.
So, tell us, what's the movie called for a start? Let's get right into it.
Well, it's called Plan B, and apparently in the States, Plan B is the name for the oral contraceptive, so that was like an additional thing that I found out after I'd named it from an American friend of mine.
So, what's the premise of the movie?
Well, the premise is it's this woman who's trying desperately to get to work, and all these things go wrong in her morning routine because she's got two children that she's trying to organise, one into school, one into daycare, and that pretty much makes her late, and then there are all these other things that happen to her. And it's set on Waiheke, so there are some typically, Waiheke things that happen to her. Like, one of the things is that she needs to get to work by ferry, which, of course, is always the thing that limits us and makes us desperate in the morning.
So it's fairly autobiographical then?
So I'm told. But in fact, it is autobiographical, but it's perhaps biographical in the sense that a lot of people's stories are in there. Like, I've talked to a lot of women, and there are little bits and pieces in the story that come from their stories and their morning experiences.
So how does someone go about, why did you go about making a film? I mean, most people don't get up in the morning and say, I'm going to make a movie.
Mm. Well, this is actually for my master's in screen production. It was my thesis film. I guess what I felt is that when I was trying to make the film, this is what came to mind, probably because I am bringing up two children practically on my own. And so that was the thing that was most present to me. And I also sense a lot of frustration amongst women who are at home, that there's a lot of things that they do in their life, which is really time-consuming, really drudgery-focused, which causes them a lot of stress. So it's not necessarily the stress of a thriller, or it doesn't have that kind of magnitude of some action film, but it nonetheless causes people stress.
And I imagine the process of making a film pretty much replicates the kind of stress and anxiety which you're portraying in the film, did it?
Well, that's right, yeah. In fact, it was quite interesting to me how, there's that thing of, you know, whether life imitated art or the other way around, because sometimes I'd get to school with my kids late and the teacher would look at me and we'd just have a giggle, because in fact that's what happens to the main character in the film. And I was really lucky because my daughter's teacher agreed to use room 27 at Tahurahi, and so a lot of the kids got to take part as extras.
So is this the beginning of you as a filmmaker, or is that it?
Oh, look, I'd love to make more films. The problem is, I mean, there is the big challenge is money. You know, it's always expensive to make films. Even this film, which is such a little short film, ended up costing about $6,000. And that's just in feeding the crew and getting them over to Waiheke and accommodation and hiring the cameras and the lights. So it was an amazing experience. And, yeah, there's just not that much funding in films. So unless we get, you know, a really great patron who's going to front it all, it's going to be quite tricky.
So you did this as your master's thesis?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So when do you hear about all of that? That's quite exciting.
Well, look, I don't know. I guess they just mark it at some point and throw it back. But I mean, for me, the point is to try and get this film into festivals now. So there are some local festivals coming up. There's Homegrown, which has lots of local short films. And then there are some overseas festivals. You know, there are some women's festivals and family festivals. And yeah, so it's quite important to me to kind of profile women's experiences in film.
So submitting it for a thesis, I presume, means that you have to write a whole lot of theoretical twaddle to go with it?
Yes, I did have to write a lot of theoretical twaddle to go with it. And I have to say that was more stressful than making the film. And yeah.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have some you know, a bit of local cinema. So you're debuting this, aren't you? The world premiere?
Yes, that's right. So it's Monday night. It starts at the doors open at 7:30. The bar will be open, and they're screening Plan B at 8. But the other exciting thing is that Matias Pinochet, who's a Chilean filmmaker, he's made his second feature, and he's got his premiere just after mine, and that's Rolling Guadalupe. So that's a story, it's in Spanish with English subtitles, and it's the story of a female killer who goes around Southeast Asia. And yeah, it's kind of pulp fiction-y, it's a lot of fun, the dialogue's really good, and it promises to be a nice evening, I think.
Yeah, so 7 o'clock, did you say?
It's 7:30, yep. The film starts at 8, the first film starts at 8, the second film starts at 8:30, and it's a gold coin entry to pay for the hall.
And are you doing one of those producer, you know, the director talking and taking questions after the movie like you do at the festivals?
Yeah, we might do a short thing like that, mostly just introducing the film, but, you know, I think it's just for people to enjoy the films, really. I mean, for me, the exciting thing about the film that I made is that it's filmed around Waiheke, you know, at the day care at the school, at the ferry, and I think it's really nice for people to see their own lives kind of reflected back at them, because we don't really get that much opportunity to see local cinema.
And do you have another project in mind?
Well, I don't. I'd quite like to direct a play, so if anyone's got a great play out there or can think of a great play that they'd like to see up at Artworks, let me know.
Okay. Very good. So there we go. So a Waiheke film debut, 7:30 on Monday night at Waiheke Community Cinema. Thanks, Sharon.
Thanks very much, Chris.
You're on Waiheke Radio. One of the things I mentioned in the What's On guide was The Magic Rock, which is a theatre piece devised by the students of Artworks Youth Theatre, and I have two of those gentlemen with me here this morning. Good morning, Sawney.
Good morning.
And we've also got Kit here. How are
good
you?
Good morning. Yep. Good.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the Magic Rock.
Okay, well, it's sort of a, it's sort of random, sort of different, sort of, it's hard to explain, like, scenes.
Give it a go.
But they're all based on Waiheke Island, and they're all based on this family who are travelling to Waiheke Island, and all the sort of magical things that they encounter on this day.
Yeah, it's a story about an American family who come here to Waiheke to have a holiday, and when they come here, the kids encounter all sorts of things, strange magical creatures at the beach, Stony Batter, and Ellison Park, right outside Artworks Theatre. So it has quite a deep plot, I guess.
And how did the show all come together? So how did the writing of it occur?
Well, we sort of wrote it ourselves. Like, I wrote the Stony Bat scene, and, I don't know, Sawney, I think, wrote the tour guide scenes with Ellison Park, and, yeah, we all sort of made it up. It wasn't the instructors, Paolo, Amber, and Tainui. They didn't know what the show was going to be about, but then we sort of all made it up.
All they had was an idea that it was definitely going to be about a family on Waiheke, and, I play the tour guide, Mac, who shows the family around the island, and Kit plays...
This old guy at Stony Batter who recalls some of his memories of his soldiers dying against this, like, Oogobob fairy, which is a creature that we created.
Yeah, that's... also, it was our idea, the Oogobob fairy.
And so have you created as well all of the costuming and the scenery and all that kind of thing?
Well, actually, we're not going to be having any costumes. We're just going to be having all props. All we're going to be having is, we're going to be all wearing pure black. And just so that the audience can tell that it's not our props that tell you what who we are, but it's our acting. So,
Okay, so it sounds like an exciting piece of theatre, though it might be a little bit chaotic and random as it goes, but that's always exciting. Whereabouts are you performing it, and when?
Well, we're performing at Artworks Theatre, just in the Artworks courtyard, and we're performing a Friday evening and a Saturday matinee, and also a Saturday evening. Yeah.
Okay, and how much does it cost for people to come along, do you know?
We haven't actually been told yet.
Oh, okay, I can tell you. It's adults are $10, children 5 to 15 are $5, and under 5s are free, or a family of two adults and two children can come in for $25. And you can book at Artworks Community Theatre on 372-2941, or you can email artworkstheatre@gmail.com. So, yeah, so you did this as a school holiday program, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we did a 3-week course of all the weekends. And after that, that was just basically learning, like, the circles of acting. Third circle to everyone, second circle to someone, first circle to yourself when you're speaking. And
I learned about tableaus.
Yeah, tableaus.
Which is like... sort of like freeze framing sort of things, so the audience can define exactly what the picture is that you're making.
So is theatre something that you want to continue on with?
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, probably. I think so.
Yeah, is it something you get to do at school, or do you have to wait for the holidays to really get the opportunity to give it a go?
Well, sort of. I've been involved with like shows throughout school, but this is always good because you have extra sort of in the holidays to reinforce what you've learnt in the year.
Yeah, I don't get much acting at school, but there's not very much going on in Waiheke High School when it comes to drama. But when I was in England, I was involved with a lot of plays. But since I've been here a year, I've only been in last year's show and this year's show.
Well, good stuff. Well, we're all looking forward to that. So that's on Friday the 29th of January at 6 p.m, Saturday the 30th at 2 p.m, and 7 p.m, and Sunday at 2 p.m.
I don't think we have a Sunday show, actually.
No. Don't you?
No, okay. We've changed it to Saturday, because, two shows, like, on Saturday night.
Yeah. Okay.
Because quite a lot of people won't be coming on Sunday, because, like, there's church and...
Right, okay, yeah, so two shows on Saturday. So if people check out the theatre 372-2941, they can get all the info there. Hey, thanks very much, Kit and Sawney, for coming in and telling us about the Magic Rock. And good luck with the performance.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues. Brought to you by Island. Art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Oniroa.
I've got with me here Rebecca Armstrong from the Waiheke Coast Guard, and you'll remember Rebecca because she's been in before talking about water safety and boat safety, and we're going to pick that series up at the beginning of next month. But Rebecca's here today to talk about something altogether different, which is one of your big fundraising events, isn't it, Rebecca?
That's right. We've got Show and Shine coming up on the 31st of January down at the Causeway in the sports fields down there, as it's been in previous years. It'll be running from 10 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night.
So for newcomers to the island, what is Show and Shine?
Okay, Show and Shine is basically a hot rod display. We've got the National Hot Rod Association coming over. We've got the hot rods on the island all coming down. So there'll be heaps of cars. There's 58 cars coming over from the mainland, and there'll be the cars from the island as well. And also the local classic bike groups are coming down as well. So we're going to have motorbikes, cars, trucks, all the emergency services will be down there to display their vehicles and bits and pieces as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been past years, and you don't have to be a car buff to find it quite impressive. There's some beautiful machinery.
There is indeed.
But it's not just wandering around looking at cars, is it?
No, not at all. It's a full family day, really. We're going to have stalls down there and sausage sizzle and ice creams and drinks and food, and there'll be bands playing throughout the day, so it's a really good day to come down and listen to some great music, a lot of it local music.
Do you know who you have lined up?
Yeah, we've got Mother Tongue, we've got Plastic Patties, we've got the Burrell Boys, Feigned Innocence and Radio Rebelde at this stage.
Excellent. And the bar's open at the Dirt Club?
Yep.
No, not the Dirt Club, it's the Sports Club.
Yep. They've got the bar open there, and also their food will be going as well.
Excellent. Oh, that should be a good day. And an entry fee, so you can make some money?
Entry fee is a $2 donation. This year we're raising money to go towards it's called a FLU unit. It's a infrared imaging system which will allow us to see people and vessels in the water a lot easier because it picks up the heat from them. So it makes sort of those life and death sort of scenarios a lot more successful.
Yeah, okay, well that's good. Helpful for people on the island as well, isn't it, knowing that there's that kind of backup
there? Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so that's Sunday the 31st, and get down there. And what other ways are you going to make some money out of that? Because, I mean, you know, $2 on the door, that's not going to buy you a unit, is it?
Absolutely. The sausage sizzle, come hungry, because we're selling lots and lots and lots of sausages, and that's also going straight to Coast Guard. We'll also be running around with some raffle tickets, the Coast Guard Summer Lottery raffle tickets, and they will be $10 each. And you can pay for those by Visa as well. So if you haven't got money on the day, Visa is accepted. And that will be drawn at the end of February. And that's for a car and a boat and all sorts of things.
Oh,
so
yeah,
that's a massive prize.
That's a big
prize.
One, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big prize. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Oh, well, let's get everyone in behind that, everyone, and support Waiheke Coast Guard, who do a fantastic job for us here. A bunch of volunteers doing a really good job. So we'll be down there next Sunday.
Great. And I did forget to mention that for the kids, there's also going to be bouncy castles and little bikes, and also the bungee guy from the markets is going to be there.
Okay, and have you got the car rides going this year, do you know?
We're hoping so, yeah. Weather dependent.
Good stuff. Hey, thanks, Rebecca.
Great, thank you very much.
Welcome, Di, from Waiheke Library.
Good morning, Chris. Back again.
Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. So, what have you got for us this week?
Well, it's another end to another week in the holidays, incredibly busy over there, while all the sites in town are on laid-back mode. We've got hundreds coming through the door now, and I think we've been the busiest. This feels like to me the busiest summer that I've worked there. I've been there 5 summers, and it's, you know, we've had up to 700 people through the door on our busiest day, so it's phenomenal. It's good, of course, lovely. And now when we have a quiet day, you know, like now when we have 400 people, we think, oh, that was really quiet, but that's still really busy for us. You know, normally we're 300, 320. And so, yeah, it's all the families that come from town use us. So, yeah, fabulous, but we're kind of glad when school starts again. So on that note, yeah, we have had a summer holiday reading program, which has brought the children in the door. And we had our highest number, I think, that registered too. We had 57 children, the primary school age, registering for the program. The idea is just to keep them reading over the holidays and having incentives in the program, which they love to receive, and there's always a party and book vouchers to win and everything. So we've got our that finished today, and we have our party at the end of today, so with the treasure hunt and all the good things that children love. So that's been really successful, and the kids delight in coming to share what they've read with us, because that's part of the program. They come in and they share what they've read, and they draw little pictures and make us bookmarks. And so it's been quite successful this year. And then the other thing that I've been... the kind of management stuff doesn't happen so much. So I have had a bit of time for professional reading, which you don't normally have. So it's been quite nice sitting at the computer and going into library journals and sussing out what's happening around the world. And so just coincidentally, stuff came up around about teens, and I'm always quite interested in... it is a time when teens can back off from the library, but it's also, and you see them coming back when they're a bit older, but there's always things going on for them. And so what I've seen this last few weeks I want to touch on, and that's the graphics, of course, which I think we all know now is has had a huge explosion in publishing. But there's a lot of teens non-fiction being, and adult non-fiction, being published as well. So it's quite, even though it's like what we would perceive as cartoons and maybe shallow, there's actually some extremely high quality non-fiction books being published. And so what's happening is that teachers are putting those books into the reading lists and, you know, realizing that it's okay to read your content via a graphic novel or a graphic non-fiction book. So that's big, and it's great that, because for some kids, you know, reading the graphic is actually a format that they can, like, do as opposed to not reading at all, because we do have families coming and go, oh, you know, they need to read three books on such and such a topic, and there's a lot of books that they can read now that are in that graphic format. And so if you go into our website and the keywords are downloadable media, it's in the digital library, and you can just find masses of stuff for the curriculum, which is in, well, you know, it's in either, well, yeah, sorry, I've got to backtrack there. You can go into our website and you can find, you know, say you want a particular book, and it will be in different media forms and formats, and it'll be in either downloadable, or it could be an ordinary book, or it could be in a graphic. In a graphic form, and so they can fine tune their research on our website to find the sort of format that they'd like, or an audio book as well. But I think for teens, it's pretty cool that they can either download a classic from the website onto their iPod or their MP3 player, or burn it onto the computer, and that allows them a different way to access the knowledge they, you know, normally wouldn't be very enticing, but it might make it a bit more enticing. And then,
are there a good range of your books available as downloadable books now, or e-books?
There's like That collection is growing all, probably weekly actually, and I had a bit of a squiz yesterday, and there's a whole range. There's all the biographies, there's history, there's the social sciences, as well as the classic novels that kids have to read today in high school. So, and you will, you know, through searching through the catalogue with the keywords, you'll easily find what you need. So, yeah, incredibly accessible. So I encourage kids to do that. There were some examples of three graphic non-fictions that came through a library journal that might be useful for... Oh, just as an example, one of them's the cartoon history of the modern world, because kids learn, you know, I think, 20th century history, and it says that it shouldn't fool readers... that this guy, Larry Gonick, his history is both informative and comprehensive. So that's a really good way to get your kids into that. And then there's another graphic novel by a French photojournalist who went into Afghanistan and saw the kind of Soviet and the Mujahideen, the interactions of all that. So that's in graphic form as well. And then there's another one by Ari Folman, which is called Waltz with Bashir, a Lebanon war story. And that's a topical piece of work as well. So, yeah, to read it in this way, I think, is, pretty awesome for some kids that might not necessarily want to otherwise, and for it to go on the reading lists.
And so you don't even have to go in, do you? You just do that from home.
Yeah. You can just order it all from home, or do the downloadable thing if you want to do the listening thing or the graphics. Because we have such a tiny, tiny collection of graphics in our library. But, of course, as you probably all know out there, that you can order a book from any site within our collection in Auckland City Library. So, you know, just because we don't have it, don't think it's not in the system, there's, you know, there's millions of books, so we're bound to have something that you need. Yeah, and then the last one that sort of I was in my professional reading time was the interesting idea of high school teachers reading aloud, because, you know, it all happens in the primary school. But I remember as a high school student, my English teacher, we always had a book on the go. We always got read to every day with a book. And it's now being recognised as quite a good thing to do with your high school class. And it doesn't have to be just English, you know, it could be maths or anything. And it's just a way to, what they're saying with the research is that being read to is helps their literacy, the adolescent literacy. It helps them be interactive, and of course you can intersperse discussion with your book. It models good reading, it increases reading fluency, and it just kind of excites the kids with, you know, reading's okay. And yeah, so, you know, I think it's quite neat that that's coming up again, that the high school kids get read to as well. And of course we have people coming into the library, couples who are reading to each other in the evening, so they have one book and they each read to each other, which I think is lovely as well. So I don't, and even at home, you know, parents, there's nothing wrong with, you know, somebody reading to the adolescent. It doesn't have to stop when the child is 10 or 11. It's always nice being read to. And in fact, when you're having an audio book, that's what's happening. So it is. It does seem that it's happening in the classroom too with senior students, that it's a way to, you know, to kind of, it's a part of that particular topic that they might be doing. Yeah, so it's fascinating doing the professional reading, and I pick up lots of interesting little things, you know, trends that are going on around the world. So, yeah, there you go, my little bit.
Okay, thank you, Di. And some exciting things that people can pick up on there. So look out for the, what do they call it, multimedia or audio? What did you call it, that
yeah,
category?
Yeah, downloadable media, is that's what you can put on your iPod or your MP3 player. Yeah, yeah, and then okay. You've got the graphic novels.
And do they have an expiry on them or something?
So yeah, you go in, and I've just downloaded one onto my little MP3 player. It's pretty simple, so if I can do it, anybody can do it. Now, what was your question, Chris? Sorry.
No, just about, do they expire?
Like, yes. Yeah. Okay, so you put it on your MP3 player, you've got it for 2 weeks, and then you have to delete it off.
Yeah.
Or they might automatically do it, I'm not sure. But it's a 2-week period. And you can also put things on request, you know, so you can put downloadables on request as well. And you get an email which will tell you, ready to pick up, you know.
Okay, so there's a limited number, it's not like an endless supply of
No, if the book is out, you know, inverted commas, somebody else has got it.
So it's all to do with the licensing.
Yes. So, yeah. No, that collection's great, and I think underused, and love to have more teens and adults and children, of course, using it.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much, Di.
Kia ora.
Today I'm joined by Toby King-Turner from Cycle Action Waiheke and Nikki Kaye, MP for Auckland Central. Welcome to you both.
G'day, Chris.
And they're here today to talk to us about a proposal which is going forward to include Waiheke in the National Cycleway. So, and you're going on a bit of a ride, I believe, as well.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's just something to go over part of the route so people can get some idea once they see some publicity evolving from that.
Okay, and Nikki, you're obviously in support of the idea.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think it must have been a few months, about 4 or 5 months ago, that we all first met with Denise Roche and had a chat about putting an application in, but I just got to take my hat off to Waiheke Cycle Action, because they really put in a superb application, so I really hope it's successful.
And are you aware, Nikki, of other communities around the country doing similar kind of thing? Is everyone kind of putting up their hands and saying, oh, you can ride your bikes here?
Yeah, it's been massive, the take-up. Like, there's 53 applications that have gone in for the cycleway. I've been involved in 3 of them. I've supported both Waiheke and Great Barrier, who have both put in an application, and also an application for the Auckland cycleway, which covers 12 different rides, of which Waiheke is considered one of them.
Okay, so the idea, I mean, when this first arose, I kind of had in my mind a trail going from the top of the country to the bottom of the country, all connected together, but that's not how it's shaping up, is it?
Well, I think we've just sort of got to wait and see the scope of the applications, but I think that's the vision in the future. I mean, at the moment, as I say, there's 53 applications. I'm not sure exactly whether they cover the whole country, but, you know, I think that's the vision. That's the ultimate goal.
Now, Tony, you've been involved in putting together largely this application for Waiheke. So how do you see the island fitting into the national cycleway as part of that?
Well, the fact that we're only an hour and a half from the main airport and also... the main airport and from overseas, and also 35 minutes from about a third of New Zealand's population in Auckland, it just seemed a natural fit. The fact that Waiheke is distinctly different to probably most other places in the Auckland region makes it quite attractive when you consider the things that it does have here. For example, you know, you've got vineyards, you've got native forests, you've got wetlands, you've got a lot of attributes which only we have. And these are the kinds of things that I think international cycle tourists as well as domestic cycle tourists want to come over and see.
Now, Cycle Action Waiheke, of course, have been fairly vocal in recent times saying, hey, Waiheke's not that great a place to ride a bike because of roads and safety issues. So how do you overcome that to make that something which could be part of this project?
Okay, the main thing is to get a really good infrastructure built, which is basically involves off-road cycleways. There'll be a huge spin-off from that, in that the bulk of kids, if they wish, will be able to ride to school. Mm. Families will be able to ride on the weekends. Commuters will be able to ride safely. That's the big one, safely. And what is happening now, there's so much more traffic on the road that it's not safe for a lot of people to be able to ride a bike, especially if they're not all that experienced. You can't expect people to be coming over from town and from overseas riding on roads which are not safe. Simple as that, really.
Yeah. Now, Nikki, as well as, I suppose what you get is an alignment between different kind of objectives, really, isn't it? Because the government's objective is not so much about kids biking to school, is it?
Well, I think what we've sort of said is there's, whilst the primary objective of the cycleway is around increasing tourism, there's massive spin-offs. And, I mean, we recognise that in terms of, kids being able to cycle to school, people feeling safer on the roads. But I just sort of, in terms of cycle safety, it's something obviously since I fell off my bike and broke my ankle I've been putting a bit of attention to. And there are a number of parliamentarians who care about cycling and cycle safety, and we've actually formed a bit of a group, and we're having a discussion about that, whether there's anything else in terms of policy that we can do to make our roads safer. So, yeah.
And obviously economic development is something that you'd hope to see come out of this?
Absolutely. I mean, I personally think, look, it is a really competitive process, the cycleway process, but even if Waiheke wasn't successful, I'm pretty determined to deliver this for the island, because I just think, firstly, it's totally in line with many people's values here around, cleaner transport and the environment, but also it's really important for the island. I think there could be massive tourism benefits for the people of Waiheke.
And is that economic development or spin-off, is that something you've covered off in the work you've been doing, Tony?
Definitely. Waiheke is a tourist destination, and increasingly so. One thing I've noticed this summer is the amount of cyclists that are over here, even going around the bottom end. I've spoken to people down there, and they said a marked increase, and that's just a natural process. But once, hopefully, we'll be successful in our application, I think the numbers will climb quite radically, exponentially.
Good stuff. And what's the process from here? So we've got 53 applications around the country. What happens to them?
There's a technical advisory group that are looking at all of the applications, and they will decide which ones go through to something called feasibility. And that's when, if Waiheke is successful, there'll be a number of people that will come and say, look, is there a business case for it? What are the issues in terms of safety? And they'll do more detailed work. And then there'll be a process which says, at the end of that, if it makes it through, then they'll proceed with the work on the cycleway. As I say, it is a competitive process, and I'm really hopeful that Waiheke will be successful.
Yeah. What's the timeline on it, do you know?
Mid-February, I think we'll hear.
Yep.
But as I say, I think we're just going to... there's enough people behind it, both in terms of the island and I think on, you know, in Auckland that want it to happen, that we'll try and make it happen anyway.
And is there any kind of lobbying component? I mean, once those applications are in, is it worthwhile people kind of, I don't know who they would talk to or what they would say about it, you know, to push the case further?
I think, look, it's a pretty independent process and they've just got a set of criteria that they're working through. I mean, obviously part of today, though, is that we are doing the cycle to give a bit of publicity for it and a bit of support around the island. But I think, you know, it's a pretty independent process, so...
And, Tony, I imagine even if we're unsuccessful in being incorporated into the National Cycleway, the plans that you've put forward are something you'd like to see furthered anyway?
Very much so. Yeah, I was in Boulder, Colorado about 18 months ago and saw what they've done there in the last 10 years. And it's just phenomenal what can be done if you've got the political will.
Yeah.
And their tourism, cycle tourism, has taken off. The locals love it. And it works. And it improves people's quality of life.
Mm.
So there's no reason why we couldn't have it here. Admittedly, Boulder's a bit flatter. But that... doesn't make it, that shouldn't really make a difference.
Gotta love those Waiheke hills.
Yeah,
they're pretty grim, aren't they? Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I spent a little bit of time on the rail trail over the summer in central Otago, and the benefits there have been incredible out of what's happened. And it'd be nice to see the same happen here.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay, so if people want to get more involved with cycling on the island, Tony, how do they go about doing that? With, you know, obviously they hop on their bike, but if they want to get more involved in the advocacy?
Okay, if they want to do that, they can contact any of the members of, or the committee members of Cycle Action Waiheke, Tom Ransom, he's the chair, or myself, Barbara Cuthbert, any of those people, yeah.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay, and do you have a website?
No, we don't.
Oh, it's the 21st century, Tony.
Oh, well, we're still on bikes, eh?
Yeah. Okay, and Nikki, do you put out any information kind of updating on these things about what's happening with that?
Yeah, I mean, when we hear about the different applications, I'll make sure that's all updated on my website. But if people want to find more out about the cycle trail as well, I'll make sure that's on my website. There's a very good Ministry of Tourism website that sets it all out.
Okay, and it looks like the weather's cleared just in time for your ride. Where are you heading to?
We'll be going around between Blackpool and Surfdale, around the Esplanade, and then up the hills, probably via Wilmer Road, and up and over into Palm Beach and along the top, and back down to Little Ony Rye.
Yeah, so you do get a couple of big hills in there.
Got to have a few hills, eh?
Yeah. Okay, hey, thanks very much for joining me. It's Tony King-Turner from Cycle Action Waiheke and the MP for Auckland Central, Nikki Kaye.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Cheers. You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.